Yeah, well, there's so much. And speaking of overwhelming, we had one guy at the booth who told us he owned 700 stocks. And when I repeated, I said, "You own 700 stocks?" I wanted to make sure I was right. He said 736. And as Rick and many other folks, including myself, will tell you, that's too many stocks, right? You can't kiss all the girls. You can't do enough deep diligence, especially in this high-risk sector, to do justice to a portfolio of that much. So really pare down how many companies you want to go after. Do your education or do your diligence before you come to a show like this to have a short list of companies you want to evaluate. Even for a guy like myself who spends the majority of his time in the sector, I typically don't own more than 15 or 25 names at any given time because you really need to know the nuts and bolts of those companies and stay in tune with what they're doing, what their catalysts are, what their treasury is like to give yourself a fair shot.
Nick Hodge, Digest Publishing 2026 Rule Symposium. Good afternoon to you, my friend.
Andy, good to be with you.
Yeah, so give me your thoughts so far. How's the conference treating you? What are your thoughts? What's the energy like for you guys, and what do you see and feel?
Energy's been really good. It's my first year as an exhibitor here and a sponsor at the Rule Symposium, so we've met a lot of high net worth individuals that are fairly new to the space, so I think they have a lot of questions. I think that they see the merit of the precious metals and the critical metals side of things. They saw prices go to records in 2025 and early 2026, but they are still novice in terms of how to evaluate these opportunities. They still have a lot of questions, but they're hungry. And they know that we're in the middle of a pullback where they can use the education they receive here to deploy capital. So I've talked to a lot of business owners, pilots, doctors, surgeons, real estate developers that have capital, and they don't know sort of the right way to employ it and the right way to do the diligence on these companies. That's obviously something that we can help provide. So we've had a lot of traffic at the booth. When Rick asked the question on the first morning, how many folks first time here, I saw a lot of hands go up. So that's good. It's invigorative for the space, and we need new blood and we need new capital to fund these companies and to kick off the next boom or the next leg of the bull market.
Yeah, so let me talk about that. And I deal with a lot of people, and they want to be in this space, but they don't know how to be in this space. Talk to me about what would you tell that person? Yeah, where to start, because it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, well, there's so much. And speaking of overwhelming, we had one guy at the booth who told us he owned 700 stocks. And when I repeated, I said, "You own 700 stocks?" I wanted to make sure I was right. He said 736. And as Rick and many other folks, including myself, will tell you, that's too many stocks, right? You can't kiss all the girls. You can't do enough deep diligence, especially in this high-risk sector, to do justice to a portfolio of that much. So really pare down how many companies you want to go after. Do your education or do your diligence before you come to a show like this to have a short list of companies you want to evaluate. Even for a guy like myself who spends the majority of his time in the sector, I typically don't own more than 15 or 25 names at any given time because you really need to know the nuts and bolts of those companies and stay in tune with what they're doing, what their catalysts are, what their treasury is like to give yourself a fair shot in, again, what is a super high-risk sector. It's not for a lot of folks. I should say that at the outset. But for some of these high net worth individuals that have capital looking to deploy it, you ask what they should be looking for. You know, a lot of these companies aren't generating revenue. They need to raise capital to go out and, as Rick would say, answer some unanswered question, do a drill campaign or do a geophysical survey or gravity or seismic or whatever it is. And they need to raise capital to do that. And they do that by selling shares. So one of the things I look at first is, to whom have you sold those shares? At what price did you sell those shares? And that comes to share structure is what that's called. How many shares do you have out? At what price were they sold? How many do you own? What did you pay for your shares as an executive? Are you aligned with my interests? Because what you'll find in this sector is a lot of, you know, quote unquote lifestyle companies where the executives and the management don't necessarily have skin in the game, and their interests aren't aligned with yours. Their interests are either collecting options or collecting a paycheck to fund their lifestyle and maybe mining shareholders more than mining something in the earth. So share structure people, first and foremost, and keeping it tight, not just in share structure, but in terms of the amount of companies that you have and are evaluating.
Yeah. You sound a lot like our friend Jeff Phillips, a friend, and he's become a mentor of mine as well, you know.
But you say also something very, very telling. In the last quarter, I was looking at my portfolio, and I own 30 companies, mm-hmm. and I even thought this is way too much, mm-hmm. and so I actually was selling even more. It was just to sell, and just so I can be more focused on the 15 to 20. Just that's for me. That's my sweet spot.
Yep.
Or else I just get, it's just overwhelming and too much. So I appreciate that. And also, I can't agree more with you. Again, going back to Jeff Phillips' share structure, I think that's missed a lot in venues like this, or just when people are pitching you. It seems like every story can sound the same, or it's very exciting. They generate all this excitement, but I think that's such a great question, is what is the share structure, and how many shares do the insiders own?
Everyone's got a story. Everyone's hyped up about the next catalyst or the next drill campaign. But really, the share structure is what dictates what sort of upside you're going to be able to enjoy. And if every shareholder, not just those in with the cheapest paper, are going to be able to benefit. Jeff's been a mentor of mine for a long time. And so that's probably why I sound like him. He's taught me a lot of what I know about evaluating these companies. I attribute a lot of my success to him. And back to what you said, it's about owning the 15 to 20 companies. It's not just a matter of, you know, how much time you can spend and getting in tune with them, but also the fewer companies you own, the more concentrated your positions are. So you can really participate in a meaningful way in the upside. If you own 736 companies and one hits it big, I mean, how much of a stake do you really have in the one that's outperforming? You might as well buy an ETF at that point, right? So owning too many companies sort of dilutes the sauce when one of your companies is doing really well. Right. If you can narrow it down to 15 to 20 and a couple of those have meaningful wins, it's going to be more meaningful for your portfolio as well.
Right. So on that note, the great Doug Casey, I remember reading his book, and he was actually even smaller. And again, I want to say it's between 15 and 20. I don't know the exact number, but he got it down to 10.
Okay.
And if you just hit one out of the park, it more than makes up for any of the, all of the other losses, if you would. So.
Yep. I think it was either him or it might have even been Jeff who said, I see it quoted in Mark Skousen's book, a lot of these junior mining companies are like burning matches. If you hold them too long, you're going to get burned, is what they said.
Yeah. So, Nick, how do people participate like the smart ones, the insiders? And that's really what your expertise are, doing private placements and getting in early. How do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so at Digest Publishing, we have a service that I run with my partner. His name is Gerardo Del Real. It's called Private Placement Intel. That service is basically selling access to our deal flow. We're writing a lot of checks ourselves. We're participating in these private placements. We're doing the diligence at a level that we would do it for ourselves because we are investing in these companies. And we're passing along access opportunities for you to get involved with these companies at an early stage. So we're evaluating some of the things I went over earlier, the people, the share structure, the asset, the jurisdiction, the opportunity, what we're underwriting or what we're funding.
You have skin in the game.
Absolutely. Yeah. 80 to 90% of these deals we're funding as well. And by our seat in the industry, by having done this for 20 years, by knowing people like Rick, having done business with him and Jeff, and just knowing a lot of the executives in here, it begets, not success, but it begets more opportunity, right? Like, you know, you're talking to company A at their booth, and their CFO or COO has another opportunity that they're raising seed capital for or whatever, and you get invited into that deal. Like, those are deals that, you know, these conference attendees wouldn't otherwise know about, right? And we're able to pass those along. The other way I've been sort of pitching it, if you got to use that word, is, you know, Rick says that in order to exhibit at this conference, the stock has to be in his portfolio. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you think it gets in his portfolio? He's done a private placement with the company a year or two prior. And so by the time they're here, the exhibiting or marketing, guys like him have already got their positions. And that's the opportunity we afford folks through private placement intel, is coming in at that same level. I'll give you a couple of examples.
Please.
Bravo Mining is here in the exhibit hall.
Yep.
That's a company that hit $5 a share in the past couple of years. We did that at the IPO level alongside Rick at 64 cents a share. It gave our members an opportunity to make 400 to 500% upside.
Right.
Similar with a company like Aldebaran Resources, which we financed at 30 cents, and it went on to become a $3 stock. you know, those companies are here exhibiting now, but we funded them at the private placement level 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago in some cases, right?
Right.
So coming into these stories early, when the quote unquote smart money and the big financiers in the space are coming in.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. One of the questions my evaluation, because I do private placements, but I also buy in the open market, but I'll go and I'll ask or evaluate a company, is there enough meat on the bone? Is it still worth it or worth my risk, and go through all of that. But what you're doing is, this is a big, fat, juicy steak or it's nothing.
That's right.
So if there is meat on the bone, if there is something there, and if a drill hole hits, you're getting most of it, if not all of it, correct?
We're typically funding a new idea or a new story or a restructuring or a special situation or a capital pool corp that is turning into an actual listing. Going back to those examples I just gave you, like Bravo Mining was a brand new company, right? There had been no opportunity for anyone else to buy it before we and our subscribers got in alongside like Jeff and Rick, right?
Right.
They had just taken an asset from Vale in Brazil, a PGM asset, and they were going to market with it. And we were the first ones to get whatever analogy you want, a crack at the bat or a swing at the pitch or whatever.
Yeah.
No one else was able to buy shares until that private placement. And then the retail investors come in after. So yeah, we're trying to do deals where there's a lot of meat on that bone or where something new is happening or some catalyst is upcoming. And that's typically what the private placements are for. Mm-hmm. They're to fund something, to fund some drill campaign or to fund some economic study. And they're also to get insiders positioned, right? Mm-hmm. Like when insiders have skin in the game, that's the way they buy as well. So typically you're writing checks alongside management or directors, board members, et cetera. So if they're willing to write a check, you've got to assume or think that they think there's upside in the deal as well because they're coming in at the same level.
Right. So two questions or one point and then one question, then we'll wrap it up. What exactly, when somebody writes a check, what does that look like? And I would say too, let me take a step back. I use this analogy, this is not perfect analogy, but similar to like the tech sector. When you're in the tech sector, those people in the Bay Area or Seattle, when they're writing a check for the next AI thing now, or the next Amazon or whatever, you are trying to find those types of companies, but in the mining sector, correct?
It's very much like venture capital,
yeah, 100%. Exactly.
100%. Yeah. So you're funding some idea or some, again, Rick's term, unanswered question you're trying to get an answer to. We find the deal, I do a full write-up, we send it to you. It says, here's the opportunity, here's where they're raising money, and the price and the warrant terms, here's how much they're raising, here's how much it's gonna be spent. And then it's up to you to decide. You know, we're doing 6 to 12 of these a year, and you, as Andy, say, you know, for my portfolio, I'd be willing to make a speculation or an investment of this size. You're contacting the company, say, hey, I'm Andy, I'm coming from Private Placement Intel, I'd like to write a check for $10,000 or $50,000 or whatever it is. And then you're buying the shares directly from the company. That's an important distinction. You know, I've been talking to a lot of people here, they think these are truly private companies or you're buying private stock. That's not the case. A lot of times these are already trading companies, they're listed on an exchange, but they're selling you shares from their treasury, as opposed to you buying shares from someone who's willing or wanting to sell their shares. So you're taking issue or you're taking control of new issued shares from their treasury. They come with a 4-month hold time.
Yep.
They're restricted shares. In that sense, they're private. And then after 4 months, you can get what's called a legend removed. And you can sell those shares on the open market just like any other shares in the company. So there's a little bit of a learning curve. You do need a full service broker to get that legend removed for you, you know, at one of the brokerage houses, Sprott or Canaccord or Haywood or something like that. Mm-hmm. You've got to make the size worth it. There are some fees involved with that. And you have to be accredited.
Right.
So you need to be making, at least in the US, $200,000 a year by yourself, $300,000 with a spouse,
or
have $1 million net worth, or the typical boxes you can check.
Right.
And you got to be writing checks that are worthwhile, going back to making it meaningful for your portfolio.
Well said. Well, if Nick, people want to do business with you, if they want to access your services, how do they do that?
Yeah, we've got a website, digestpublishing.com. is where you can see all about the products we offer. That's the members login site as well. We offer a free podcast every week called Bizarro World. You can see that on YouTube or Spotify or Apple, or you can go to bizarroworld.com. That's the free daily e-letter, and you can sign up to receive that. The easiest two ways to find us.
Excellent. Well, really good to see you. Good to see you in person.
That's right.
Yeah, and I'd love to get you on again soon.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Cheers.